3K. I am a compulsive overeater, recovered just for today, as I like to say, because that's what I have to worry about just today. And I want to thank everybody doing service here, and thank you very much for asking me to come in and share a little bit about something that's very important to me, and that is emotional sobriety. So before we start today, what I'm going to say is, first of all, the set-aside prayer, because it's the way I usually start when I work with a sponsee or when my sponsor works with me. So, and I put in my own words, you know, Lord, help me set aside everything I think I know about me, about OA, about the world in general, about especially about you, Lord, and especially my recovery too, speaks so that I can have a better open mind and understanding of what you want me to be focused on. Let me see the truth. So what I talk, I'm going to just give you a real quick to let you know there, you know, a lot of people here know me, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my backstory because it's more important to me to let you know where I am because I came in this program when I was originally when I was 25, 24 years old. I'm 73 now, and I left and I've been back in program for 5 years. But a lot of miracles happened even in those first years. But again, I'm not going to talk about that today. I will also tell you that I have a huge trauma issues. Unfortunately, my father in 1960 had a very bad heart. He was not an overeater. He was a thin man, in fact. But unfortunately, he had open heart surgery when he was basically, you know, a guinea pig. And it didn't, he lived 3 days and that was it. So he died at 45. My mother was 40 at the time, and my mother was a child of an alcoholic with huge abandonment issues because she'd been given away at 12. And my father was everything to her. She became very narcissistic, which we didn't know that word then, but because I was also narcissistic, I had to, you know, I've learned that I learned from the best, my mom. The bad part is 2 years after my dad died, my mother, never getting over his death, had major strokes. And because she was an undereater, there's no doubt my she was definitely a restrictor. I don't believe she was bulimic. She was never, in my mind, and I do remember because I always compared myself to her, she was not a anorexic, but she absolutely controlled everything that went in her mouth. And as I like to say, in my sick mind, she had a brick shit house build, which I never understood what that really meant, but they say that. So anyway, she did. And I never thought I looked like her because I was always heavy. But I see myself right now as I look in at myself and this, oh my God, I look just like her. But I didn't see that because all I could ever see was she was thin. She lived. Unfortunately, she didn't die. I think she wanted to die. She didn't think, you know, she wouldn't have came out and said that. But, you know, that's the thing about alcoholism and different problems. A lot of times we keep repeating it and giving it to future generations. I'm glad I've been able to change that in my family. And she lived in a nursing home for 45 years, worse than death. And of course, therefore, I lived in a nursing home for 45 years because I was, from the time I was 9, every Sunday of my life was spent at a nursing home. And that was also after I was married, have children, and everything else. She died the day after her 86th birthday. Now that's, and then I, but when she first got sick, I went to live with her sister, my Aunt Nancy, who was my mother and my favorite aunt. She also had a lot of problems because of her alcoholic family. And she never was able to have children again because they forced her to have an abortion. So God had a reason for her to live, for take care of me. However, she was so scared that she'd lose me that she became almost, you know, I had to be perfect. And of course, being 9-year-olds and thinking you have to be perfect or you won't have a place to live, you learn to lie quickly. You learn to do what you need to do, even though she would have never gotten rid of me. She gave, you know, I was a 9-year-old. What I heard, I thought as a 9-year-old would think. Okay, so that's my backstory, pretty much. And how I've managed through it all, you know, like I said, I've spent a year in adult children of alcoholics in my 30s. I've gone through, I was a member of, I don't so much go to Al-Anon anymore, but I did have alcoholic behaviors, which is why I need emotional sobriety. So I'm just going to very, very quickly, and I mean very quickly, just show you that I definitely belong in this group. I came in, I've been various sizes throughout my adult life, and also my high school life. And I, at my highest, came in at 250 pounds, which for me, I'm 5'6". There you can see a little bit of me. I have a couple pictures of the journey, as I call it. That's me at 250 something. I'm starting to come down here. This is when I first got into OA 5 years ago. This is me 2 years ago. And this is also me a year ago, because a year ago I had to have some surgery. I had a little bit of a relapse because I had surgery, and then I had two really bad falls that left me pretty much not a whole lot of mobility. And so I also relapsed in that I gained back 15 pounds. I am now losing again. I'm very thrilled with that, but I had to learn that contempt prior to investigation was keeping me in a situation where I didn't want to be. So let's talk about what is emotional sobriety. Well, Bill Wilson liked to call it the next frontier. And if you've never seen any of Bill's writings on that, all you got to do is put in the word on do a Google thing for the next frontier by Bill Wilson. And you can find a great article. And I'm going to just show you one part of it here, the very beginning. And you can feed around. It says, I think that many oldsters who have put our AA booze cure to severe but successful test still find they often lack emotional sobriety. There's the word. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA. Remember, he did this in, I think, the 60s. He came up with this. The development of much more real maturity and balance, which is to say humility in our relations with ourselves, with our fellows, and with God. You can find that more. Like I said, all you got to do is put in the next frontier. So what does that mean for me so far? Well, I'll tell you. It has a lot to do the way I live my life today on life's terms, and it hasn't been easy. I've been in an emotional sobriety meeting for, we've been together for 4 years, and I've been in there since the beginning. I will tell you that what I'm going to talk about is my version of reality and what I've learned about it myself and during working on my emotional sobriety, just like I had to work on my abstinence. And I am abstinent today, which makes me great. And as I said, I'm losing again, but it's not my business. But what is my version of reality? Am I really sure that my thoughts are based on me now or on my trauma experiences? And for so often, I never was able to, separate them. So can I find a reason? Am I honestly willing to look at it without any buts? Because everything after but is bullshit. Am I inflexible? Am I stubborn? Is it my way or the highway? Conditional bargaining. Am I still trying to be a people pleaser but being very selfish? And so when I started to look at these, because just recently I had a situation where I had some real problems with my daughter-in-law. I'm a first-time grandmother, and my daughter, my grandchild is now 4 months old. And basically, my daughter-in-law, man, she was just not having it, man. We're 6 hours apart, but she was just, I thought we were great friends, and boy, my expectations were wrong. And it didn't go down well with me. I can't change her. She has trauma. Now, the good thing is, because of this meeting, because of sobriety, the baby's 5 months old. I'm going up at the end of the month, and I'm going to be taking help and take care of the baby. But I've recently told him, you know what? The stuff you told me, you were right. I was wrong. I don't know it all. Even though I had a kid, I don't have a kid today. It's your baby. At 35, I didn't want anybody to tell me, oh, well, I did want more because I was like really scared to death to have a baby. I really was. And I think that's why God didn't give me one until I was 35, which is also a miracle. We won't get that today. But I realized I was wrong. So, oh my God, I finally got it working. Everything's good. Everything's hooking around. Well, now it means you have to do it in all parts of life, not just with your daughter-in-law, Anne Marie. If you have a problem and it's your problem, you need to take your part of it and own it and then say, yeah, but no, the but doesn't work anymore. So what I had to start to do was I started to ask myself questions. Why do I feel I need to be right? In what circumstances do I find it harder to surrender that feeling of having to be right? And I often go to the big book because I love Jung, and I love where Jung says we must have a huge emotional displacement and rearrangement of ideas, emotions, attitudes, which were once my guiding force in life. Well, remember, my guiding force was a 9-year-old with trauma. And that 9-year-old became an adult 9-year-old. Taught middle school kids, so she was really good at it. Let me tell you, I learned from the best. Although I always told them, you guys have too much to learn to, you'll ever catch up with me. See, there again, I had to be better. But Jung is right, And some of us don't get it right away. Like I said, I was in this program until I was 28. I quit, didn't come back to 69. And like I said, I've been back just five years in January it was. Well, it'll be 5 years in July, excuse me. Doesn't matter. Anyway, what is different? I have changed dramatically since that time, but each it's been a level because, as is also in the big book, I am the educational variety. I like to call myself the Doubting Thomas of OA because just prove it to me today. That may have been good for you guys, but maybe today it's not so true. So then I started realizing I still was looking for somebody to make me well, not doing it myself, not really trusting God, even when I thought I was, that I had really done a third step. That's okay though. I've heard lots of people tell me the same thing in program because that's where we are at that time. What I've learned now is, again, Herbert Spencer at the back in the big book at page 568 talks about contempt prior to investigation. If I keep seeing, no, I can't do that, it's not that I can't, it's that I won't. And usually it's because it's uncomfortable. I may have to take a look and see how many times that thing, every time I point at you, how many fingers are pointed back to me. And as they say, one pointed up to God. I forgot about the God thing. So then what do I have to do some more? Well, I have to be aware of it. So as I told you, a couple of weeks ago, I had a situation where I thought I was being perfectly right, but I found out, and God, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that that was there for a reason. God needed to go, pay the hell attention. I'm trying to tell you something. And sometimes it's exactly what it takes for me to get the reason. You know, I remember there were times my husband would say things to me about, it's all about you, Amory. And I thought he was kidding. But he was right. It was all about me because I have this immense ego. When my son told me one time when I was doing a mentor, Mom, I love you. I love the way you are, but Mom, you are a force of nature. He said, being your kid in school was difficult because everybody loved you, but man, I had to live with you. And that's right. I never thought about that. I never thought that what I was doing may not be the way you want to do something. So I use my family's examples all the time, going back to my Aunt Nancy. I remember one time, again, why did I do these things? So this is an example of one of those times when I couldn't separate it. And this is my favorite story, and I never thought of this as being trauma. When I was 12 years old, my Aunt Nancy was mad at me because I kept not cleaning the stove correctly where the salt and pepper shaker was. I wouldn't pick them up and clean the grease out of there. Now, remember, we're talking alcoholic family here, perfectionism. So after a few times of doing this, she said, okay, I'm sick and tired telling you, you may not buy Beatle records for a year. Now, I'm a huge, and I was a huge Beatle fan. And this is when they were the most prolific. A year? Now, that story, the only reason I point that out is, and this is not recent, this is quite a few years ago, this happened. My husband was cleaning up some something, and I said, hey, now don't forget. And I remember he looked at me and said, do you think you're the only person that's ever done this? That minute he said it, it turned to me, oh my God, we're in the kitchen. He's cleaning something up, and I'm Aunt Nancy. I'm going to take Beatle records away from you. Now, the reason that that came up, and I said, you know, I'm really sorry, but you got to understand, she used to punish the shit out of me if I didn't learn a lesson immediately. And she didn't do it because she was mean ogre. She did it because she was so afraid they were going to take me away from her. Because the other problem was half the family was Catholic, half the Catholic was Protestant. And she was the Protestant side. And the Catholic side was going, well, you better, you know. Okay. So here's where there's neural pathways. I had to learn to be perfect. And you know, we can't do that. We're already perfect when we're born. You can't have more perfection than what you have. You can make progress with the problems. So that's why I like to make practices progress. Sometimes I forget, like 2 weeks ago. But then I can do, what do I do now to help myself with that? Because that's the next question. Well, before I knew what a 10-step was, I used to have a God box. And my God box is right here. It's still always here. I haven't written in it for years. Because the fact that I do 10 steps now. But a couple of weeks ago, I looked inside just to see what the hell it said. Oh my God, the stuff that I wrote in here. I can't believe it. Those were the things that I ruminated on. Then I have 10 steps, which I can do. And I do them immediately. You don't wait tonight. That's not a 10 step. The big book says, look at the directions. It tells you just you immediately talk to somebody, you ask God, and then you know, you talk about it, you say your prayer, and then you reach out to another person. It's all written out for you in a big book. Sometimes, if it's not really a big thing, and I realize I'm doing it again, I say, bless them, change me. And I can't tell you how many times I've said that. Often, so often, because it has to become part of my thinking. You know, I remember as somebody said, you know, when you're a kid, when you leave the house, and they, don't forget your manners, don't forget your please and thank you. If they only said that to you one time, you're not going to remember it. That's why every time I went out of the house, I heard that. Because it has to be part of this up here, our thinking. I can also say to myself, do I have to be right? And there's the word. Why do I have to be right? Is this the mountain I want to die on today? Is it that important that I have to can't keep my pie hole closed? That I have to then, here's the thing, do I have to keep explaining myself? Why do I always have to keep explaining? So, because I'm still trying to be right. I'm still trying to be right. Okay. So, you know, I'm inflexible. You know, is it based on that trauma? As I said, what are the circumstances? I told you my daughter-in-law around the house routines at my husband, how to work my program or others. In other words, let me tell you what to do, even when you don't ask me. 12-stepping folks that aren't even in program, needing to overexplain, can't give it up. You know, I just got to make my point instead of just nothing. That's hard for me. And I'm very ADHD, so, but that's not an excuse. It was an excuse for my students, so I can't use it an excuse. Always finishing your sentences before you get a chance, because I already know what you're going to say. Wrong. So these were all things I had to do. And another thing that I had to do, and this was something that I use with my sponsees a lot too, and with friends that are having, they get stuck, is this beautiful thing called, why do I always have to be right? Or not, am I selfish? Excuse me. And I'm going to put my phone numbers up there. If you see it and you would like a copy of this, you just text me and I will send it to you. Read it with me. Am I selfish? Because I never thought I was selfish. But if I was resentful, it was because someone did not do what I wanted them to do in the past. They didn't do it my way. And that's being selfish. That, oh my God. If I'm angry, it's because someone not do what I wanted them to do right now. They're not doing it my way. And that's being selfish. If I'm fearful, oh yeah, absolutely. It's because I know that someone is not going to do what I want them to do in the future. They're not going to do it my way, and that's being selfish. That's why I always had to finish your sentences for you, because I had to prove to you that I was smart. I was afraid you'd find out that I was not very smart, which also was not true. These were just the lies. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm Einstein or anything, but I'm not as dumb as I thought I was. I never gave myself credit for those things, which is a whole other story. If I feel guilty or remorseless because I got my own way at your expense, oh yeah, and that's being spacious. And that's what happened to me 2.5 weeks ago. Before a meeting, I was feeling guilty and remorseful. I got my own way at someone's expense, and that was being selfish. If I feel jealous or envious, it's because someone has something I want, and I want it now, and that's being selfish. That's not to beat myself up. That was for me to identify what I did not know. And I didn't know a lot of my feelings. I often mention the fact that I've got this paper that I keep because I used to have to look and see. I would find out what the synonyms and the antonyms of selfish was, or honesty, or oh my God, being dismissed. See, usually I do exactly the somebody. If you spot it, you got it. That's because that's what I do. So I had to look like under dismissed, banished, expelled, removed, evicted, ostracized, shut out, terminated, minimized, criticized, degraded, badmouthed, maligned, disapproved, vilified, abused. These are all words that mean dismissed. And I couldn't tell somebody what I was feeling because I didn't know. Resentful, angry, mad, bitter, sarcastic, scornful, malcontent, vicious, embittered, acrimonious, petty. This is a great tool. Know what you're feeling, be able to tell, because, and we'll be able to see if I look under fear, like the big book says, it seems to steal from us. So I hope that I've given you a little bit of an idea about what emotional sobriety means to me and what I'm trying to do now to become a more balanced sobriety because I'm not using food. And hey, look at that. So I always like to say when I end, have a great day unless you've made other plans. And I'm also going to put in your chat the meeting flyer for our Monday and Wednesday emotional sobriety meetings. And it also has a link to the podcasts, which are shares, 15 minutes long, usually. You can stop after that. And again, the meetings are always recorded, and we have 4 years worth of meetings now. So thank you so much for inviting me, and have a great day unless you made other plans.